Welcome to What's Left, a weekly political discussion challenging the mainstream left. I'm Eduardo Barca with co-host, teacher and socialist Andy Lipson, and community organizer and socialist Kenny Cepeda. We are online at what-s-left.webnode.com. Today, we will be discussing the Great Barrington Declaration. It is going to be a very, maybe controversial episode for some, and I hope that we don't get demoted or not demoted because it's monetary. We don't get obscured within the or this episode gets shut down because we're going to be discussing some
from barely known to not known.
Yeah, they're gonna add a footnote to the episode. COVID information. That's what they're doing in other platforms. So.
Yeah,
I'm sure that's what's going to happen.
And I do want to say how this. So this kind of came up from Eduardo. You sending me that thing from Democracy Now. You wanted me to watch. I had never heard of the Barrington Declaration, Great Barrington Declaration. And you had said that there was a kind of a doctor there who was challenging Amy Goodman. You know, and you knew I would like that. But you also were like, hey, I want to talk about herd immunity, which I think is raised in the declaration. So after reading it, I was like, okay, I think this is worth talking about because I think there's some interesting things in it. There are some things I don't agree with, but I wanted to let people know that it exists because everyone says that the science community all has one voice and one mind on this, which isn't even scientific itself to say that. But I thought it was worth discussing.
And I should mention that Andy is our scientist in residence.
Yeah, but you said I was going to try to explain herd immunity, but I don't think there's much to say there, but we'll get into that.
Well, either way, your angle from this will be, you know, you have a background in science and you currently teach in high school science and you were formerly in research, no?
Yes.
And so my point is that I hope that maybe some of the stuff that these epidemiologists are discussing maybe get clear with some of the defined terms that I'm not even familiar with myself.
Oh, okay, we'll see. But I think my doctor was taken away from me by everyone else when I was skeptical about COVID and when I said I really don't think we need to be wearing masks. So I was pretty much said that I stopped being a scientist at that point for everyone.
Well, that can get your credentials revoked.
Exactly. Oh, Lord.
All right. So let's start then, no?
Yeah. The Great Barrington Declaration. As infectious disease epidemiologists and public health scientists, we have grave concerns about the damaging physical and mental health impacts of the prevailing COVID-19 policies and recommend an approach we call focused protection. And I'm just going to stop here and say a little bit about some of the main authors are this guy, Dr. Martin Kulldorff, who's a professor of medicine at Harvard University, epidemiologist. He was the dude who I saw on Democracy Now! Then there's some Dr. Sunetra Gupta, press professor at Oxford University, also an epidemiologist. And then Dr. J. Bhattacharya, a professor at Stanford, also an epidemiologist, and they have other credentials. And then below, and you'll see this if you're watching the video, because I'm going to show you it, there are a number of co-signers of doctors from around the world, some from the United States. So I think I'll just start there. And if anybody else has something to say, they can go from there.
Most of the co-signers and the signers of the petition seem to be from the Western world, and you know, like Europe, in the US and Israel. Just to point that out, I don't see, you know, people from other areas of the world.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you recognize any of these doctors? I only recognize the one from Democracy Now. That's it.
No, yeah, I don't recognize them all.
All right.
I'm sure they're really smart.
Yeah, well, I just figured there aren't any prominent non-doctors that are supporting this.
I mean, they are, I guess, academics, a lot of them. Is that,
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
And they're part of, they seem to come from, like, renowned institutions. I recognize institutions, educational, you know, universities and stuff. I don't quite recognize their names, but, like, the people's names, but.
Yeah.
Mm.
And at one level, I think it works towards people saying, oh, they have more credibility. I don't actually believe they have more credibility because of that, but that's going to be meaningful for some folks. I actually think some of the weaknesses of this declaration are about these people being hermetically sealed in these academic mainstream institutions that put them into a bit of a groupthink as it comes to what COVID is about and what's going on. So while I actually do support some of the spirit of what this thing is, and I'm glad that there's doctors actually speaking out against lockdown, which they do. There's, you know, these people are all basically, their heads have already been fixed. And they have, many of them even have a financial stake in making sure things don't change too much.
So the next section starts with, coming from both the left and the right and around the world, we have devoted our careers to protecting people. Current lockdown policies are producing devastating effects on short and long-term public health. The results, to name a few, include lower childhood vaccination rates, worsening cardiovascular disease outcomes, fewer cancer screenings, and deteriorating mental health, leading to a greater excess mortality in the years to come, with the working class and the younger members of society carrying the heaviest burden. Keeping students out of school is a grave injustice.
So I guess the only thing I'll say that stands out for me is leading to greater excess mortality in years to come. That is something that makes sense. I just didn't think of it that way. To me, it sounds almost like when people say that to create some radical change, you two might not agree with this, but for climate change policies, a lot of people are concerned about the economic burden that will be. I know I've discussed this with my friend Jake before, and he says that it will have a tremendous impact onto the economy. But I always tell him to look at what would be the cost of not doing anything over a long period of time. And this is similar to that, at least for me, in that there's a greater excess of mortality in years to come that is unforeseeable, because we just don't know what right now is happening to all of the people that are not being treated for so many of the things that are being outlined here. Fewer cancer screenings, or deteriorating mental health, the rise in suicides, or cardiovascular disease outcomes, or just even, I saw this somewhere else, where the childhood vaccination rates are lowered in other countries as well as in this country. And all of that will have some consequence. So, so it's a good perspective to look at from that side of things.
Yeah, I agree that they speak about there's going to be a long-term effect, mental health and people's health effect on this. But I also think there is an immediate effect from. I mean, it's now essentially much harder for people to, like, I have a friend who has some issues that he's trying to deal with, who really has a tough time getting to a doctor, or can only get to a doctor over a video. And you have to go through a whole screening process with a video to get the right to go to the doctor. And so we've talked for years about people not having healthcare, and has healthcare really being so important for preventing problems. And now we've created all these hurdles outside of getting a COVID test, to going to see your doctor. It's like last time we talked about, everyone was always talking about how bad it was to be on a screen, and now we're putting screens in front of everyone. Now we've actually created all these barriers towards actually seeing your doctor. It was so hard to get regular care and good care from your doctor before, and now we've made it 10 times worse. I know in the case of the dental field, There's been talks of people who are now beginning to trickle back to their dentists and tooth decay and gum disease and all sorts of problems like that that doctors are talking about and seeing. And this is also a health issue. And on top of that, I mean, this is doing immense damage to people's mental health immediately. I mean, there are people who are killing themselves. I'll just say that, or trying to kill themselves, or are killing themselves. And so it's devastating in the future, and it's devastating right now.
Yeah, I mean, just wanted to add to that, like, you know, around me, there's plenty of people breaking down for different reasons. Obviously, it's a difficult year, but it's a lot of, you know, financial changes. You know, I guess maybe we'll get into that later, but I'm not so sure, like, that the economy is suffering. You know, there is a restructuring happening. You know, there is wealth being, you know, squeezed up to certain, you know, there's people making a killing out of this.
Yeah.
And just like in any crisis, capitalist crisis, there's always a restructuring of the, you know, workers end up doing more work for less pay, basically, in essence. And this is, you know, happening en masse. And like you'll mention, for example, the way we go to the doctor has changed. You know, that was a possibility to do a video call before, but now it's the norm. And now people will probably expect that. Same with school. You know, we don't know what the lingering, you know, excuses are going to be to keep these systems in place, even though they're not very efficient, you know, at solving the issues that we talk about. They're efficient at making profit, you know. They're efficient at keep pushing the wealth up. But again, I do agree there is a lot of, you know, mental health issues that are going to come about this. And I can already see them in my community, my people, my friends, myself.
And I know we're sticking, but I want to talk about something that now I do think is missing, because I do appreciate them talking about, okay, this is hurting working people. But I think for them to only talk about it in the context of health is also too narrow. There was a quote, this is from Alison McDowell, who wrote about this declaration in one of her Wrench in the Gears blogs. And she wrote something that I think is really important to keep in mind. And I agree with her perspective about this event. She goes, "My perspective is that we are living through a devastating economic event meant to catalyze Davos' fourth industrial revolution rather than a biological one. In my opinion, at this stage of the game, we should be focusing less on COVID, because there will be another one, and more on the systems of control being put in place in its wake." And so this I feel like that framework about the economic restructuring and the economic attack, they leave completely out, and I don't think they should. There's another set of doctors who talk about both of these things, the restructuring of health and the restructuring of the economy and the surveillance state being built, censorship. I'll mention them later, but this group of doctors is being very narrow, I feel, in their critique. And I think I don't think that's good.
Let's just continue saying what we've been saying for a long time now. What they are highlighting here, keeping students out of school is a grave injustice. So I think we should continue.
And I definitely
agree. Banging our heads against the wall and making lots of noise to continue saying that everywhere we are. So I'm glad they mentioned it. It's sad that they just kept it to one sentence, but I can understand the declaration. Right. "Keeping these measures in place until a vaccine is available will cause irreparable damage, with the underprivileged disproportionately harmed."
I agree with everything in that sentence, except until a vaccine is available. And this is something we'll probably get to in a future episode. I am very skeptical. In fact, I believe something's in work here with the vaccination that's being talked about, the mRNA vaccine and all these different industries and the militarization of the process. So I just want to say, and we can get into a later episode, that no, vaccine, no. Yes, it is being, these measures in place are doing irreparable damage to our children and to workers and to people of color and the underprivileged, definitely disproportionately harmed. But a vaccine, I think, will all be part of that as well. So I just want to put that out there. I'm not proving it yet, but we'll probably have another episode where we talk about this stuff around Operation Warp Speed and things like that.
I mean, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of weight being put on the vaccine, you know, and considering the, you know, the conversations, you know, regarding conspiracy theories and, you know, anti-vaccination people versus pro-vaccination people, I think this almost like is setting up to be like a very interesting, you know, debate, because I know plenty of people, myself included, that is very hesitant, you know, supposedly a vaccine, you know, a clinical study is supposed to take about 7 years on average. And then we're supposed to, you know, trust this, you know, vaccine. And I'm curious too, like, you know, as to the mortality of it, what is it going to cost? And then it's not just, again, the magical bullet, because then we're talking about, you know, delivering and who gets to take what, you know, in, you know, from the vaccines, and especially considering that this is supposed to be a global issue. So it'll be very interesting, but it does feel like a setup almost in my mind.
I think we, as we are learning about this virus, we are going to understand that there might be some that might need it. I'm not sure if this current vaccine is the solution or the answer, right? But there was an article in the New York Times that came out yesterday where people can be immune to this virus. And it is one of the, now that we are, 9 months in, we are beginning to see some results of people having strong antibodies against this virus. So that might be good news. And so I think to just center around the vaccine is canceling out other options that we might be able to reconsider, which is maybe there are going to be a necessity for us to be immune to this virus for us to really succeed.
And I do want to point that out, because there was another group of doctors, World Doctors Alliance, who specifically mentioned things like, because they're very concerned about the vaccine and how quick the whole thing is being done. Normally anywhere from 7 to 10 years is, they say, the fastest you can get one that's on the thing. And now they're talking about maybe within a year. They mentioned like vitamin D, vitamin C, zinc given to people who actually are developing respiratory symptoms. And they talked about, they say that the statements about hydroxychloroquine, and there's been a lot of demonization of this. And they said, look, this worked against people who were SARS-1 victims back in 2005. And they cite a number of journals who talked about how hydroxychloroquine can be used. And so they're kind of suggesting that there's a reason behind the demonization of these alternatives and saying, oh, no. And that everything's being shunted into the vaccine area. And I believe that. So carrying from there, fortunately, our understanding of the virus is growing. We know that vulnerability to death from COVID-19 is more than 1,000-fold higher in the old and infirm than the young. Indeed, for children, COVID-19 is less dangerous than many other harms, including influenza.
So this is where I begin to critique it a bit, and even after this, because I would like to know, I would like for there to be references or something where I could look into what they are claiming, what they are stating. And I looked throughout this entire website, and there weren't any. I understand this is a declaration, but there should be some notes, some references for people who would like to confirm, or if their peers who are in the scientific community might want to look further into whether they are getting their data or their information, that would be helpful. So So I'm just relying on what they know, right?
For me, again, just like the vaccine, it's not, I would have questions about it. I have questions about the data that we have compiled so far, you know, and things like testing and people testing positive. And I mean, I guess I am only speaking from an anecdotal experience, but it makes me question as to how they compiled this. Because like my family went through COVID protocols in San Francisco, and I've gotten tested about 25 times, all negative. My brother got tested a few times, all positive, because he had the virus and he wanted to go back to work. So he tested positive. So I wonder how they're counting this as individuals or, you know, in.
I think it's important because this is one of the critiques that was given. What they're talking about, I think here is narrowly the likelihood of dying from COVID. They're not talking about whether you get it or not. It's the likely, if you get it, will it lead to death? And so the prospects for dying are about 1,000 times lower if you're young than if you're old. And they aren't that high if you're old, but they're higher. But they really vanish into the when you're younger. And so that's kind of what they're getting at. I think one of the critiques that I heard, and this was in the Democracy Now!, is like, wait, what about the other effects of COVID? You're not recognizing them. They basically said, well, other influenzas also have other effects and things like that. I would say that I agree with you, Eduardo. They didn't cite anything here, and that would have been useful. The World Health, the World Doctors Alliance actually did. They say something much more dramatic. They go, and this was written actually in April or May, I think theirs, although they've updated it. And they said, it is abundantly clear that the pandemic is basically over and has been since June 2020. And they give a citation, I think basically the NHS from in England. And they show a rising curve and then a diminishing curve. And they pretty much show that the curve is flattened. And they said, we have very highly likely reached herd immunity and therefore have no need of a vaccine. So from the viewpoint of these doctors is the threat is over as far as the peak of that threat. And that was interesting to me.
I mean, and that's where I'm trying to get at that, you know, this thing may have been spread way more than we know and because a lot of like my family, my sister-in-law got one test and got positive that one time. There's so many people around me that I know are socializing and they're not getting tested, you know, so this thing is maybe more widespread than we think. And so maybe like they're claiming in that what you just cited, Lipson. Yeah, you know, like a lot of people maybe have been exposed to these.
That's now, just a thought. Do you want me? I mean, I wouldn't keep this in the episode. Do you want me to show you the little curve that they showed from the NHS? I'll just show you what they did, and I'll just share my screen here. See, here it is. Okay, this is the graph. Here it starts in what's the third month? That'd be March right here. Okay. And then this is April, May, and here is June. Right about here is June. So this is the flattened curve. And they show a little lump starting here in September. But I mean, and this is NHS, man, National Health Society. So I'm like, okay, that's a flattened curve if you ask me.
And we don't have data for the U.S. like that?
I haven't seen any. I think we have seen a rise and a fall like that, but not exactly the same thing from the NHS. So we've seen the same up and down of the deaths. Now, that's why the emphasis seems to be on cases and not deaths, because for the most part, the deaths aren't that big.
That is true. I do hear about the cases rising. And we are in California, they are rising as well.
Cases, but cases and testing is rising. So, but cases is not cases is not the same thing as a health crisis that is killing people and overwhelming hospitals and all the things we heard about before.
What do you make of when Trump says that, of course, we have the highest rate of cases in the world because we do the most testing? I'm not here to bash on him. Rather, I'm just trying to find if that statement is true, because they do a lot of testing in Europe as well. Yeah. And yet we still end up being, by GDP, the highest in the world.
I don't know the answer to that, but it doesn't make sense to me. I think other places, I know that South Korea is testing a bunch.
And yet we still are amongst the first ranked with the highest cases. In comparison, if we're able to sort out the differences, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I thought maybe there might be more to that than I don't know.
Right. So as immunity builds in the population, the risk of infection to all, including the vulnerable, falls. We know that all populations will eventually reach herd immunity, i.e. the point at which the rate of new infections is stable, and that this can be assisted by, but is not dependent upon, a vaccine. Our goal should therefore be to minimize mortality and social harm until we reach herd immunity.
And I guess this is the part where they took a lot of critique, like they were saying, oh, you're just trying to kill everyone by throwing them out into society and just doing herd immunity, as if herd immunity was like something unheard of. I mean, it's been around since the 30s. People have known about it since the 30s. It's a normal part of the way the human immune system works as it relates to viruses. In fact, if human as a population didn't have herd immunity possibilities, then vaccines wouldn't work. Because it's basically dependent on the idea that those people who do get the infection and then survive it and develop an immunity to it essentially create a more difficult situation for the virus to transmit itself throughout the population. And different viruses have different levels of herd immunity. Influenza, we reach mostly herd immunity at like 30%, whereas the measles, you had to have 90% of the people had to have the immunity to it in order for it to have herd immunity. So different viruses require a larger or smaller percentage of the population to reach that point, at which essentially so many people have immunity to it, the virus has a tough time working its way through the population to find new victims who are vulnerable to the virus. Not that the virus is trying, but that's what herd immunity is, and it's certainly it's not based on a vaccine. I think everything I've read about herd immunity, they keep coming back to, oh, you have to have a vaccine for herd immunity. You have to have a vaccine. That isn't true. They have tried to boost things up with the vaccine, and I think that was one of the ways they feel like they got rid of measles. But it is a normal herd immunity is a normal way to overcome all these viruses, and it's very natural. And it has to do with the fact that our immune system is triggered by these viruses. And eventually, once you develop the immune system, which defeats it, then you have individuals who not only can't get it, but they don't transmit the virus. And so it makes sense to have people who are less vulnerable to death, like the younger people. And by younger, they mean generally under 60. Kind of beginning to populate and work with each other and be around this thing so that you could slowly introduce herd immunity into it, that would actually make everyone safer. So that actually makes some sense to me.
And speaking of the young, I was reading another article at NPR where they're discovering in Europe that school sites aren't actually super spreader sites. Children just don't seem to be, I mean, if the protocols are being followed, what they found are that restaurants are, but school sites aren't actual super spreader sites. And that's interesting because here in the USA, you're opening up businesses, but you're not opening up schools. And they're closing down businesses, and they compensated, but they're not closing schools in Europe. It's the opposite of what's happening here.
Can I do one? And just to be clear, though, let's remember that, and this is related to the notion that COVID-19 is 1,000 times less damaging to people as they get younger. It's not actually dangerous then for it to be spread among that population if there's less of fatalities. You actually are kind of encouraging. That's what building herd immunity is. You're encouraging that development among a population that is much more safe to it. Not to say everyone's coughing on each other, but you're not certainly trying to just, you're not keeping everyone away from each other, saying don't touch each other 6 feet away. Mm-hmm. You can actually allow for those sorts of things and allow people's natural health along with things like vitamin D, vitamin A, and sunshine, for God's sake, which people do need, to help them live through this. I mean, this is how we've survived. I mean, influenza has done a lot more damage to young people than this particular virus. And we let kids come. Kids have been coming to school sick for a long time.
That's true. It's very true. I do have a question for any of you that would like to answer. It's just what does sort of, this makes sense again, but there is some part of me that questions then why are there hospitals that are being overwhelmed, right? Because that's not how we see it under influenza only. Under the flu, we don't have hospitals that are overwhelmed.
We did in 2008.
If we do, though, we did?
We did. But we totally did.
Nationwide?
No, in California. But it hasn't been nationwide. Like, currently what's happening, it's you're getting nations in Texas right now. Some hospitals in Texas are saying, hey, we're getting hit in here, da-da-da-da-da, it's in El Paso or something like that. But it was in 2018, Texas got hit big. Southern California got hit giant. They had to build field hospitals, all the things you're talking about right now. So it happened
for the flu.
For the flu, yes. But nevertheless, that can happen. You can have it. It can target in a particular area. I don't think you have to shut down an entire country and ever all schools across the country because some hospitals in El Paso are crowded and they need more resources. Because it happened before. Texas got hit a lot harder, actually, in 2018.
Well, my understanding is that in Italy, it was really bad.
Yeah.
Even all the regional hospitals nearby, they were just understaffed. It was just, they didn't, and they have some of the best healthcare system, and yet they were still overwhelmed. So.
Well, like, that was true, like, in New York here, back in the day.
New York.
At the very height.
Right.
So yeah, there were places, and it wasn't throughout all of Italy, but yes, Italy got hit.
No, it was Northern Italy.
Yeah, it's throughout sections of Italy got hit pretty hard, and some of the hospitals were overwhelmed. But again, that isn't, it's just not unprecedented. It happens. It's bad.
But at that level?
Yeah. I mean.
For what and when? You said 2018 for the Southern California.
Yes.
Right? I just.
But did. What? So why, see, if that happens in Southern California, then why not shut down the entire West Coast in 2018? By extension. Because in Italy, we're saying we're going to shut down the entire world. Mm-hmm. So why not? Okay. It wasn't that bad. It wasn't just as bad. It was pretty bad in California in 2018. So let's just shut down the entire West Coast. That wasn't even up for discussion. That's because I agree with Allison. This isn't about health. This isn't about a virus. This is about the economy. The real thing that took place was not about COVID. It was about the economic. It was about essentially our latest recession, which has been a controlled collapse of the economy and now the rich getting richer off of it. That's what this story has been. That's what these doctors don't talk about. That's why if you try to follow the health story, you can't make sense of this. You only get to make sense. I think you can only make sense of it if you follow money, not just money around health, but money around data mining, money around the bailouts, and then the buying up of resources, and then how mid-level and small businesses are getting smashed while the biggest businesses are growing. You know, I've gotten much wealthier. So it's the concentration of capital. This is how the capitalists recover in an economic crisis. Is they buy up everything around them and they recover, and then they're in a much better position to compete in the future. And Chinese businesses and U.S. businesses are at the top of the food chain. Europe is behind. And now that we're going to see a battle now between who's going to shut who down. Is U.S. going to shut down TikTok or is China going to shut down Google? And that's what this story is about. And that's why I personally feel like we miss the story. We miss the understanding of it by following cases, following loaded up hospitals. That's just a misdirection. It's happening, but it's a misdirection as to what's really driving this.
Maybe this is a good place where we can insert just an update about how Google has now been sued by New Mexico or Arizona. Which one?
New Mexico.
Mexico.
Okay.
That was a good article.
They have been mining data from kids.
Where they've been found to do it.
They've been found to do it, yeah.
But they're doing it everywhere, I'm sure of it. But that was a good article.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was from the New York Times. So we'll link that. But so talking about who's actually benefiting, because this is related, who's benefiting from COVID is companies like those that were all doing remote learning or remote working. Not everyone, no, right? There are people who cannot. Yeah. But I'm just saying that there's this overreach.
Yeah. Last question. Have people heard of this thing, this term, the Great Reset? Is that a term familiar to people?
I heard of something, but I mean, not, yeah. What is it? What?
It's just something that they talk about in the World Economic Forum as this moment has happened, a Great Reset. Time magazine popularized it. And it was considered conspiratorial at one point to be like, oh, you talk about the Great Reset? But that is now the common language for how they're talking about this moment.
I think I heard it from you, Andy, actually, now that I remember.
Yeah.
You mentioned something about doing an episode on, I don't know, something around, maybe it was you.
Yeah, I was just curious.
I mean, it is kind of interesting that, you know, there has been a massive transfer of wealth, and because we are in fear of this virus, you know, there is no outrage, basically. It's just we're taking it, you know, we're giving it away, you know, that whatever they, because in 2008, you know, that led to Occupy and, you know, a lot of, you know, people asking questions and being outraged by the money that they transfer at the time. And, you know, just from the government, right? Forget the economic, you know, the exploitation and extraction from workers, just from the, you know, the government bailouts, that amount of money pales in comparison to what happened now. And no one's blinking an eye about it. No one. Not even Bernie Sanders or, you know, Ocasio-Cortez. And so there is a massive, you know, so I'm asking, like, yes, maybe there is two economies, you know, for the workers, the working class people, and for the rich people, because they're making a killing. You know, fucking Bezos almost doubled his wealth.
Yeah.
Like in the process of 6-7 months, double, you know, billions of dollars. He almost, you know, he's almost at $200 billion. You know, and we're reaching a point again. It kind of reminds me of, you know, the tycoons of industry in the U.S. You know, when they own the railroads, you know, and petroleum and all that, and no one's blinking an eye because they're doing it for our safety, you know. And so, yeah, I mean, we have to ask those questions, you know, as to what is really driving this. Is it really? And I agree with what you said, Lipson, that it's hard to know what's up from down when it comes to, like, the science, the data behind this. And I personally think that's exactly the point. It's so confusing. Even people in the health, you know, system, you know, like, I have a couple of friends that are nurses, and they, you know, they're kind of like, I don't fucking know. You know, and then, like, again, just to bring it back to my experience with COVID, you can see the chain of command, and, like, where doctors deflect to city officials deflect to the state government, state government deflects to the CDC. So if the CDC is either lying or wrong, then everyone's getting bad information. You know, like, there is no, the hierarchy, you know, there is no pushback. And if you deviate from, like, the main line of the official storyline, you're crazy, you're conspiratorial. You know, and I think that this that's where, you know, this article kind of plays into, like, I don't agree with it fully, but, you know, it's asking a different set of questions, you know, and you saw the treatment that it got, you know, the doctor got at, what is it, Democracy Now. It was very, you know, they had a plan, you know, to basically discredit the whole thing, you know, and that's supposed to be some of the most objective, you know, liberal news. you know?
Careful, Kenny. Careful. Don't get on Eduardo's shit list. I've never got off. I said something bad about Democracy Now, and I haven't lived it down since. You don't want on that list.
But yeah, Democracy Now, where are they? Where is the outrage? You know, where is the, about this transfer of wealth in the background, you know, like we're and again, even this article falls into that. Like we're trying to protect the most vulnerable, you know, while we're robbing them, you know, straight up, you know, while we're restructuring society so they, you know, they can sell their labor for cheaper later.
Well, I will just say that Democracy Now! Does talk about the transfer of wealth. So I can send you some links, Kenny. So they, that's not. but it was interesting to see that they were, that Amy Goodman, Nermeen Shea, and the other doctor pushed this doctor, I forget, Kaufman? Kulder. Yeah. Anyhow, yeah. Let's continue. The most compassionate approach that balances the risks and benefits of reaching herd immunity is to allow those who are at minimal risk of death to live their lives normally to build up immunity to the virus through natural infection while better protecting those who are at high risk. We call this focused protection.
I mean,
this is where it gets, these people are seen as murderers, huh? Isn't it?
That's what the claim was. That was the claim. That's not what I think is happening here. I don't see them for that.
No, but I can see how people can twist them and twist what they are saying, what they're trying to say. You know, it's just, oh, so just compassionately allow people to die off, basically.
I mean, I would just say that this is... Yeah, I agree with the notion of, you know, letting people... We do have to allow people to function in lives in their society, you know. I mean, so I agree with that right of people to be free and able to make decisions about their lives, but even now under a situation where there is this virus, although I do think we're at, like, they've already done, the curve has been flattened for all, you know, talk about that. I just think for me, the most compassionate approach, it's not just about a compassion. It's about, what I would want to hear is people have the right to live their lives in the way that they see fit, and to also call out the wealth transfer, to call out the pernicious actors behind this. This is sort of, I do find this is that standard academia, liberal patronizing stuff, that even if I agree with some sentiment of it about the thing that they're saying to bring out this herd immunity, I think it's weak. And I think you can blow holes right through it. And their other liberal friends ate them for lunch, you know, on Democracy Now, for not coming out hard on this stuff. So that's what I would say about this part. But I mean, what are the numbers here? Like, how many, 600,000 people, and this is the United States, 600,000 people die a year from cancer, although now they can't get to hospitals. 500,000 people die, from heart disease, or maybe I got those switched, one of those two. And then 400,000 people die from medical mistakes. 200,000 people die from prescription drugs. So let's stop doing all those things. Stop doing prescription drugs. Stop going to the doctor, because you could die because 400,000 people died from medical malpractice kind of stuff, or from mistakes made by doctors. So there's no death-free scenario. I think it's always implied and understood. People drive cars, motorcycles, jump out of airplanes. People go to schools with kids in them with all sorts of diseases and stuff like that. We understand we do that because because we live our lives. We want to be able to interact freely with each other or do things that are interesting or travel somewhere. You're getting a plane, which is obviously safer than getting in a car. So it's just... That balance has always been there. It's just been taken away here. This balance has been taken away, and everything's been made about one thing, the virus and flattening the curve. Then it was about the hospitals overwhelmed. Now it's about cases. But it's all really, what that is about fear, and fear used to control people, and fear used to divert people from the attention from something else taking place, which I think is what, you know, Kenny was mentioning earlier.
It kind of makes me wonder about, because there was a lot of fear. Remember when the Olympics were happening in 2018? The Zika virus, you know, in Brazil, and becoming a pandemic and things like that. And You know, I just find it suspicious that this is one that, you know, reached the global north, you know, and, you know, and I think that the global north might be more susceptible to fear mongering, because I think of my family, you know, we've dealt with dengue, cholera, Zika, chikungunya in the last, you know, like a decade or so. You know, my uncle could have died from chikungunya. It was horrible. You know, their bones, my grandma too. But there was not this level of attention. Yes, there was some, you know, in the background, some noise. But, you know, it's kind of like, I mean, and again, this, people would take this out of context, but it's part of being human, being life, you know, and you can't control everything, you know, and here they are, and I think they're weirdly pretending to do so. And at the same time, like driving that fear mongering into people. Like, of course, I don't want to die from COVID, you know, but like, you know, I don't want to live, in a fucking room my whole life in front of a computer.
Right.
You know, I, and again, maybe I'm not, maybe because I've been exposed to all these things all my life, I'm not so susceptible like to be like brainwashed into like, oh, you know, like don't do that. I've eaten with flies, you know, I've eaten food with flies like in Latin America. And like, I don't know. I just feel like the especially the US is particularly susceptible to this, you know, type of fear mongering. Because it's kind of new. Actually, a lot of countries, like, you know, in South America and Africa, they're kind of used to dealing with pandemics, you know, like breakouts of you know, masses of death. But this is the first time it's reached north. So I just find that suspicious, you know, and I don't know how to put my finger. Obviously, it goes back to me, to capital and money. And like you said, Libson, you have to follow the money if you kind of want to make some sense of this. It's the thing that makes the most sense. Than anything else.
The biggest thing I feel behind this, I don't know about the difference between, you know, the sentiments in South America or for people there who would be more suspicious of this. I can't speak to that. But we at the same time there has been there's been this immense fear of COVID in this country. We also had the most important election of our lifetime. And a situation where one candidate pretended to be like anti-lockdown and stuff like this. The other candidate was pro-lockdown, but both candidates are completely into this whole idea of data mining, of controlling you, of building a surveillance state. And what we saw was people being herded into two political parties, two capitalist parties. And so I think to me, that's what created the kind of not herd immunity, but herd mentality that we really have seen in this country, where people are begging the state to protect them, and/or you know, looking to a political official to do something, whether it be Trump or Biden, and both of them are liars and hucksters, but neither of them is bigger liars. I think they're both liars. Adopting measures to protect the vulnerable should be the central aim of public health responses to COVID-19. By way of example, nursing homes should use staff with acquired immunity and perform frequent PCR testing of other staff and all visitors. Staff rotation should be minimized. Retired people living at home should have groceries and other essentials delivered to their home. When possible, they should meet family members outside rather than inside. A comprehensive and detailed list of measures, including approaches to multi-generational households, can be implemented and is well within the scope and capacity of public health professionals. So for me, this is when I started to get like, okay, you know, like, honestly, this is just more control. I get it that they're trying to say, oh, we're looking after the elderly. But again, PCR testing usually means PCR testing with tracing. Them directing what staff can, how it can be rotated and who can work and who can't. No, I don't agree with that. Okay, if retired people want to have groceries to deliver, that's great. But if they want to go out, I think they should be able to go out. My biggest problem with this is it speaks as if it's trying to help the elderly. But it's just the state and some authority and these doctors basically saying, we would like to control them. We would like to tell them what to do instead of these other doctors who are telling them what to do, in all cases, it's not doctors. It's politicians. It's corporations. these are the ones calling the shots, and behind it is the military and the police. So it's this kind of stuff to me indicates how they don't understand that there is a surveillance state being built underneath all of this. That's actually part of making sure that the wealthy can separate wealth from the from workers and direct it to the top. Because if you're going to control that, you're going to need to monitor people. You're going to need to make sure you know where people are at. And so again, I don't know if these people are fools or if they're hiding or if they're kind of like, well, we'd rather be the people calling the shots. But this is where I get most critical is when I read shit like this, because all of these things have to be used. If they were going to use any of this stuff, it has to be used in a way where people are empowered to make those decisions, not states. And not institutions that are looking to control people, whether they be states or corporations. And that was my problem with this paragraph, even though it tries to sound like it's being nice.
If there was a socialist society and there is a state, then if they did take on a measure to try to prevent from an outbreak, would you both then trust a socialist state to do some of this?
No, I don't trust any socialist state. I trust workers, working class democracy, which is different. What that means is I trust if I'm part, it's like what Hema was part of. If I'm part of a network where I see and I'm part of the decisions, I'm part of the communities that are making the decisions, and no one community is going to make the same decision. That's how this is going to be as it is. Then I'm prepared to think about it. But anything which is just a state telling me, I've already seen that. And you can call it, these socialist states have all been one party things anyway. All right. So I would say no. I would say,
I see what you're saying.
You know, I would have to be part of something genuinely democratic, genuinely from below. And if from below we start to say, okay, this is what we're going to do to protect ourselves. That's what we do here in San Francisco. If that's what we called ourselves, and still if we were workers here. But if they don't do that in LA, so be it. That's what they're doing in LA. This is what we decided to do in San Francisco. Or this is what we decided to do in this part of San Francisco, another part of San Francisco doing something else. Because this is how they want to deal. That to me, I'm starting to believe. But if somebody's saying, well, we've got to monitor you for us to be safe, now we got a problem. At least I got a problem.
So if your community decides they want something like this,
I might leave the community and go somewhere else. I mean, if that's how what they really decided, or I would say, all right, I really like it here. I don't like this decision my community is making, but here we go. But I would be able to see the decision. None of these decisions that are being made right now are do we get to see. We don't see any of it. It's all happening to us. They make it act like it's coming from CDC and Fauci, and those people are just puppets behind all this stuff. You know, this is coming from Eric Schmidt, from Google, from Silicon Valley, from Wall Street. That's who's calling the shots here. And China and AI, like the Chinese state and its corporations, they're actually driving it big. And the U.S. is trying to pay catch up. So it's these massive institutions, whether they be in China or the United States, that are calling the shots. It ain't workers anywhere.
Yeah, because that is one of my unresolved issues with socialism, that I would leave it from one state in capitalism to another state in a socialist society. Yeah. Anyhow, I know that we deviated for a bit. Thank you for indulging me. I don't know if Kenny wanted to say something in regards to that. Or,
yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that's the misunderstanding of socialism. That, you know, like you want another state. You know, like what I want is workers always at the ready to go to war with the state. You know, basically, like it, because you call the shots. You know, if they're those fuckers, whoever is leading, because you will need organization. If they're not doing what we want them to do, we fucking go to war with them. You know, basically, we squeeze them. You know, and so that's socialism. That's democracy to me. You know, and so, yeah, I would be weary of any, again, like Lipson, you know, like a central authority figure just on our behalf. No, we're telling you what to do. This is what, you know, we decide, blah, blah, blah. I don't know the details. You know, I don't have a full, you know, answer, a developed answer as Lipson. But that's what I would say. You know, always the working class at the ready to go to war with the state, whoever it is. You know, to truly hold people accountable, your leaders, you know, starting from a community level.
And yeah. I want to be clear, I don't feel like I have an answer other than to say that the thing that Hema was talking about in that episode where she said, me and my community were deciding, we knew what we were about, that would have to be built across, a fabric of that would have to be built across the country and across the globe. If such a thing was constructed, a quilt of those sorts of associations where people were parts of things that they knew, where they knew who each other were, and they knew the votes that were being taken, and they knew what was being discussed and why it was being discussed, and they knew who was responsible and accountable to see that our decisions are collectively seen through, then that's what I believe in. But I can't speak to that existing. I can only say that's what I'm looking to construct.
So going back to this section of the declaration, then there isn't anything from this declaration that I guess from you both this perspective that you would trust in the staff rotation or in the PCR testing.
They can have PCR testing, but if it's going to be run by the state and they're going to use it then to say, okay, we've tested you, you're positive. Now we want you to have you on your phone so we can tell where you've been and then we're going to isolate you. Fuck off. Sorry. I think that whole thing, which they're saying is being built on COVID, it's not. And it's the same way that they're going to basically say, you can't come into the game unless you get vaccinated. You can't go to work unless you're vaccinated. This is the system that's being constructed.
And to, it reminds me of 9/11. You know, we're here to protect you. You know, terrorists are on the loose. Something dangerous is out there. Give us your civil liberties. Let us, you know, surveil. No, we're going to surveil you. We're going to surveil you. You're not going to know about it. You know, and you know, we're going to militarize the local police, continue to build that up. We're going to continue to build the, you know, protect borders. Yeah. Again. Oh, yeah. It reminds me of 9/11. And it's fear, man. I think we know that. I think people know that, you know, fear sells and people. And I'm gravely concerned because if especially during with the context of the elections, this has shown how sheepish, you know, the working class of this nation is. You know, in you know, how much we're willing to be herded one way or another, because, you know, the left got herded into a corner, the right got herded into a corner, and here we are. We, you know, the biggest transfer of wealth in the history of humanity, probably, and no one's blinking an eye. You know, we're talking about whether we can go out or not, protect our elders. And no one's, and I don't know how many people are asking elders too, you know, like, how do you want to live the end of your life?
The saddest stories I heard were of people who died without ever getting to see their grandchildren or children before they passed. That is a very sad story to me. Like, isolated in a hospital with a ventilator. That just seems awful. I mean, that was awful. So what's being saved there? Nothing.
Well, I do support adopting measures to protect the vulnerable, right? If there are people that are going to be very propensos, Kenny?
Have the propensity to?
Uh-huh. They could get any sickness, whether that be the flu or COVID. I think it's beyond that. I think in general, I think we should protect our most vulnerable. Right. Now, I agree with both of you. I'm leaning towards being wary of those who would, in the name of claiming to protect our most vulnerable, would put in measures for the rest of us. Yeah, I guess I am leaning towards that. I want to be super responsible as well. And not do things irrationally because I'm upset with the state, though, at the same time, to take care of the most vulnerable. I'm not saying both of you are not doing that. I'm just saying, in general, I think I don't want to give the message to the audience that as if forget any other protocols that we could be taking, such as simply washing our hands when even touching babies who don't probably have any, you know, when they tell you when you go and visit what do they call it when you go to a maternity place in the hospital where they're delivered, the labor something, yeah. You know, wash your hands and stuff like that, not because it might get COVID or something, just because it's the most hygienic thing to do. You know, they're vulnerable, and I think that at least I think we can all agree that that could be something that we could incorporate in our lives, yeah, in general, not just during this time.
But giving people information about how to keep themselves safer and what and things to do, and giving them options and choices and things like that, is different than saying, I'm doing this to protect you. Because Eduardo, I would totally believe if you said, I'm doing this to protect my nephew or my brother, that makes sense. But once you start talking about, I'm doing this to protect this person I don't know, now something's getting weird. And not that you don't feel that protection, but really, my role is to give them information. If they choose to take it, they choose not. And that's what the role of health officials, I thought, was to basically consult with us, not direct us, not say, I'm snatching you and taking you somewhere else, or I'm restricting where you can be. Apparently, we're starting to empower doctors with this kind of, but it's not really doctors who are using the power. Again, it's the state that's using this mask, hiding behind doctors to control people's lives. And I think it's very dangerous.
Yeah, I think it's a bit hypocritical to speak of protecting elderly, you know, and they're like, many of them are in deep poverty in this nation, you know, and like they're being gouged at fucking retirement homes for company, you know, for $15, $30 for a half hour company, you know, for the little cookies that they have, you know, there's profit being made from their lives, you know, and I think there is profit being made from their lives again right now, because, you know, we're using them to push a lot of this stuff, you know, without asking them, you know, basically, you know, because the level, we're talking about protection, we're talking about isolating them, you know, in the last years of their life. And again, like, you're not giving them a choice, kind of, right? Especially when, like, you're driving all this fear into family members. Because I've heard discussions right now around Thanksgiving, you know, people are, like, hesitating to go. And I'm like, what if they want to see you? You know, what if they're almost gone? You know, like, I agree with you, Eduardo. You can do things, you know, like, because I don't know the full extent of this. I guess, you know, it's hard to really know the truth. But okay, I agree. Wash your hands. Keep a mask, you know. Get tested, quarantine, go visit your parents. You know, that would do, at least I believe that would do more for their health than anything else, you know, like, but yeah, I think it's a lot of pretension at a government, you know, top level to say that we care about the elders, but we don't really give a shit about them. Like, this nation doesn't.
I suppose, yeah, we're talking about state versus common sense and asking out of community, right? If I invited Andy, for example, to come and visit my 90-year-old great-grandfather in a very small province of Mexico, in the countryside where he lives, where access to healthcare is, there's only one clinic in his, and it's not even a hospital. It's mostly run by nurses and one doctor in a very, I guess what you're not saying, Andy and Kenny, is, you wouldn't necessarily not wash your hands if I asked you to, but rather if it's coming from the top down, from health officials working with the government.
I mean, my only reason, Brandy gets mad at me because I don't wash my hands. My only reason for not washing my hand up is bad habits. I mean, honestly, I would wash my hands
without
bad habits. I mean, even if the government says wash your hands and whatever, I'd wash my hands. But if the police come in with a gun and say wash your hands, that's a different thing, right? So I want the choice of that. And if it's your grandfather,
my great grandfather that lives in Mexico, in the countryside.
Uh-huh. And if he said, hey, I want to meet your friend, you know, and he's down with it and I'm able to get there, I would say, let's do that, you know, and I'll wash my hands. If Eduardo said, hey, wash your hands and wear the mask, even, I would do wear the mask for you. I'd do it, Eduardo, or he feels more comfortable doing that. But it's different than saying, well, if you don't wear the mask, we're going to fine you. If you don't wear the mask, you can't go here. The state, and those are two different things.
You know what this sounds like? I know we're digressing a bit here, and forgive me, but if you may indulge me, this almost sounds as if when there was this Jordan Peterson was going against the state for people demanding that legally you say she or he for trans folk. And he was saying that I don't have an issue with it, but rather I have an issue with the state telling me I should say he or she. I don't even know where you both stand on that, if legally you are required to say he or she to someone. But
yeah, I don't think you should give the state the ability. The state should not be given the ability to tell people anything. But if you're not going to say he or she when somebody asks to be identified a particular way, then fuck you. You know, they should be, the person who's being talked to should be able to say to people, this is how I want you to speak to me. And if we don't do that, I don't think I should be arrested, but that person should find better friends.
Yeah, I was thinking of Obamacare too. You know, you mandated to get healthcare or you'll be fined.
But it served about what? Any 20 million or how many people?
I don't know. A lot of friends that don't have insurance because it was $500 for two kids, for each kid.
Big beneficiary was big pharmaceutical companies and big healthcare because they got rich.
And we're not healthier for that. You know. Okay, so the last paragraph. Those who are not vulnerable should immediately be allowed to resume life as normal. Simple hygiene measures such as hand washing and staying home when sick should be practiced by everyone to reduce the herd immunity threshold. Schools and universities should open for in-person teaching. Extracurricular activities such as sports should be resumed. Young low-risk adults should work normally rather than from home. Restaurants and other businesses should open. Arts, music, sports, and other cultural activities should resume. People who are more at risk may participate if they wish, while society as a whole enjoys the protection conferred upon the vulnerable by those who have built up herd immunity.
I mean, I guess I'm okay, you know? I at least like the fact that people who are more at risk may participate if they wish. I mean, that at least they give them a little latitude that cuts against that last paragraph. And the only thing I would say is this almost acts like the society we had before COVID is all good. Like, oh, you know, it's almost written in a fairy tale bubble. That's the only thing I would say is like, look, prior to COVID, things were really bad. Things were really hard for people. People had to go to work sick. And if you had a job, people couldn't enjoy all these things. This is the life of a person who's more upscale. You know, first of all, there is no going back to normal. And even if we could go back to normal, that normal was a capitalist normal that had to be gone, that had to be, you know, dismantled by the working class. So, you know, we have to forgive these people for not being, you know, revolutionary socialists, but they're from Oxford, Stanford, and Harvard. What are you going to do? They don't know any better because the system works for them. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt because this the dude from Oxford or the dude from Harvard took it on the chin from your friend Amy.
One day I'm going to invite Amy Goodman to this. She's living at the office right now. She doesn't want to get, you know. That's it. I'm kidding. I thought, what is she doing? She's in that group.
She's following instructions to the T.
Yeah, exactly. So those are my thoughts about this. It's like, you know, it is what it is, but
yeah, this sounds like common sense stuff, right? The stuff that used to happen before. But I suppose it's good that it's there. I mean, if people need people with credentials, people who are from those prestigious Ivy League schools to say something about it, whatever. Not whatever. They're the most highly respected places, of course, to be. No, they are. Look, I think people do follow that, right? If they say, oh, whoa, this is coming from a Harvard person, and they're saying this, how could this be? Whereas if any one common Joe of us would have said it, it's like, oh, where have you been reading? Where have you been getting your information? So it's hard to dispute someone or these people who have been in those institutions, unfortunately. So I'm happy that they are saying it and that I can refer to people who do not take me seriously enough, refer to people who maybe they might take seriously enough.
Like me.
You're not taken seriously enough anymore after you told me you listened to Alex Jones and you defended Alex Jones.
Look at where we are now, Mr. I mean, censorship is on the, you know, whatever. But I appreciate what you're saying, Eduardo. I mean, not about the, but I agree.
I mean, yeah, just, you know, I don't think, you know, like, especially in the bubble that we live, it feels often that, you know, people on the right wing are as dismissed, you know, as ignorant, as backwards, as they don't know what they're doing. And, you know, despite limited information, because I think, I don't know if it was in the context of doing research for this, but most people in the U.S. are actually kind of wearing a mask, you know, one way or another. But often we on the left, we dismiss, you know, people on the right. On the right wing, you know, the most extreme, they dismiss the people on the left. So for me, it's like everyone's getting duped either way, you know, and there's something fishy there. And the problem is that this topic has been weaponized to rob us, you know, in broad daylight, you know, and while keeping us fighting for, you know, petty stuff. And I don't think the left is better than the right wing in this topic in particular, just like in many other topics.
Yeah.
I think we're all getting, you know, a shitty deal and a mess of information, you know, sensationalized by mainstream media, you know, and so it's hard to know what the hell is happening. And ultimately, like I agree with you, like we talked about families. I'm going to respect what people want me to do. Like, but if a friend doesn't, it's okay with not wearing a mask, fuck it, we'll hang out. You know, but that's up to everyone's choice. And there should be respect, you know, in that way. Because, like, you know, just like we don't know for a fact, you know, how, you know, the actual vitality of this or not. You know, I'm just going to respect people's wishes. And I'm going to live my life. I'm not going to live in fear.
I know you've said, Kenny, that you wear the mask. Do you wear the mask, Andy?
I do when I'm told to, and I do for politeness sometimes. But if I see the person, there was a person we met when we were looking at a wedding venue, and she was like, took that thing down immediately. I was like, here I go, boop. I was like, all right, you're my kind of gal. I honestly believe we're probably risking more danger. I mean, one thing Fauci said that I looked up was when we can get into another episode around masks where he goes, you know, people need to use it. People need to know how to use it. And I guarantee you, most people are doing what I do. I stuff it in like little corners and things like this. It's shoved on the ground. I pull it off the ground. I put it back on my face. I spit into it and I put it back on. And I'm probably like creating this, that thing must be a germ factory, disgusting thing. And I think that's the situation. I think we're creating more damage for people.
I actually think that if people want to invest in stocks, invest in allergy medicine. Skyrocket after, you know, masks.
But one thing I have to tell you, Eduardo, is when you do get the wedding invitation, you are going to specifically be told you cannot wear the mask at the wedding. Kenny, you can wear a mask, but Eduardo, you can't wear the mask at the wedding. I'm just telling you, other people can wear a mask, but you cannot wear a mask at my wedding. If you bring a mask, you're not allowed to come.
Jesus, Andy. Talk about control.
I know.
Tyranny. You know, I will say this. So three things I want to say. Something going back to the declaration, but speaking on masks very quickly, you're right. This is one of the criticisms that there is, because I see people doing this, putting up, even as simple as that, you're not supposed to be touching where you're spitting into. You're supposed to be lifting from here. Every time you're talking, it moves. Yes, so you lift from here, and then you're supposed to go ahead and wash it. I have seen people use the mask for 1 week, the same one, and more.
I'm in 1 month.
You're supposed to use it one for each day or for the time, you know?
You know, it also happens with gloves. Go to any store, any shop. People are reusing those gloves, and, you know, like, if I don't, it's really just to make you feel good, you know, like to make you feel like you're doing something. But a lot of those things, like you said, they're fucking tainted with shit. Like, you know, I've seen some shit with gloves, man. Like, pay attention when you go to stores.
Randy's going to be on me even more now that I've said I have my mask for 1 month.
You're supposed to have it for 1 day. You're supposed to have multiple.
Date on that thing. I look at my milk. I see an expiration date. I didn't see it on the mask. So.
And then you're supposed to wash it and then wear it and then dry it. And there's a whole way to wash it. Look it up. Anyways.
Being washed in my glove compartment.
Wait, Eduardo, who said it? Was it the state or someone in the community? Because
it's in the CDC, but.
Yeah.
back to the declaration, I will say the one huge criticism, because Andy, when we were discussing Democracy Now, Andy went ahead and sniffed to go find traces of any money being delivered to Democracy Now. So I did a little sniffing myself. And this was sponsored by the American Institute for Economic Research, a libertarian think tank that is part of a Koch-funded network of organizations associated with climate change denial. So that's where this immediately, and I found this out just today, and I thought, oh, this is where I'm not sure if I'm going to be using this declaration anymore. I don't know if you two, what do you two make of that?
That seems about right to me. I mean, I don't think these people are into really fighting this. So I think, honestly, there's a part of the ruling class, I think, that actually is looking to begin to open things up and lock down. So I think this thing is probably useful to at least open up the discussion among workers around resisting this lockdown stuff. But this is not a manifesto for how to fight a lockdown and how to fight these pernicious effects of state control that are being put into place, that around contact tracing and data mining and stuff like that. So, yeah, I do believe that the very forces, the forces that are exposing the corruption of these folks, or at least the financial backing, themselves have their financial backing, and so they're all playing this game of like, look where they came from. But yeah, I think all these forces are mired in some Silicon Valley money or Coke money, something, or CIA money, if you want to talk about Democracy Now. Ford Foundation, man, Rockefeller. I mean, these were CIA setups.
Let's continue back. I wanted to say one more thing about the Great Barrington, which was, it was interesting how in the first section they said, we call it an approach we call focused protection. It just seems sort of this grand plan that they had. And it was just basically common sense strategies that we should all just adopt, that I thought focused protection.
But these things aren't being done to the extent that they are, quote, common sense. They're not even being done. Like we're in lock, almost full lockdown here in San Francisco and Oakland.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the museums have opened. So the last thing I'll say is maybe if anyone wants to, there is a counter memorandum. And it's the Joe Snow memorandum that was published in The Lancet, that anybody can go ahead and also look at that if they would like to, which denounces the herd immunity approach. And I think it's great if anyone wants to see a counter argument to it, they can. And I'll leave it up to them. I think people should have at least access to make decisions for themselves, whether they should go on this side or on, you know, the other side, counter to it.
I would just say that both these are on the same side, and this is just the weak version of, because I don't think these folks are on our side.
Harvard and Stanford, for God's sake.
Yeah. Well, herd immunity. I'm talking about herd immunity versus this confinement and vaccines only strategy. But I agree. I understand what you meant to say. I just yes, Andy. Yeah. Right. Anything else? That's it, right? No.
That's it. Nice job, Eduardo. And Eduardo, appreciate you bringing this up. I mean, it was a good thing you showed me, even though I got triggered like 8 different times watching Democracy Now.
I get triggered all the time with you, Alex Jones. Inspiring around families, telling sane people that these families did, you know, were actors.
You know, that's why I just watch John Oliver. British accent, you know, will always tell the truth.
That does it for this week's episode. What's Left is a weekly political podcast and channel challenging the mainstream left. We post information about our topics and our guests on the episode notes, wherever you found this episode, or on our blog at what-s-left.webnode.com. You can find past episodes to this podcast slash channel there and connect with us. I remind folks that if you like anything you have heard here, please share your favorite episode, rate, review, turn on your notifications, and subscribe to any of our 6 platforms on Spotify, iTunes Podcast, Stitcher, Google Play, BitChute, or YouTube. And if you would like to give us feedback about something you've heard or suggest something for us to cover, contact us through our blog. I'm Eduardo Barca with co-hosts Kenny Cepeda and Andy Lewson. Thank you. Wear a mask.
Wash your hands.
And wash our hands.